On a sweltery night in 1977, 25 years ago today, the power system of New York City just collapsed. 8 million people were plunged into sudden darkness. Within minutes, looting boiled over in many of the city's poorest neighborhoods. Some felt it was a sure sign of New York's decline. Just 12 years earlier, another blackout had provoked an outbreak of neighborliness in which crime actually decreased. Ever since, historians have been puzzling over the reasons for these differences. NPR's Dan Charles has more.
On the afternoon of July 13, 1977, 700 new sneakers, neatly arranged in boxes, waited in the back room of Syl and Elsora Williamson's sporting goods store in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn. The Williamsons were just about ready to expand their thriving business.
We had always been sincere. We had always given a product that they could be proud to wear.
Merchandise is secondary in this store. This store is my ministry.
As evening fell, thunderstorms erupted to the north. Lightning knocked out 4 different transmission lines carrying electricity toward New York City. Panic and poor training in the electric utility's control room turned crisis into catastrophe. Jack Feinstein was an engineer with Consolidated Edison. He arrived in the control room soon after the lights went out.
I guess the system operator was just in a state of shock and didn't even know where to turn.
Feinstein recalled the night's events for the Blackout History Project at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. At 9:34 p.m., airline pilots saw New York City, all 5 boroughs, vanish beneath them. Elevators in skyscrapers stopped in mid-ascent. Life support systems in hospitals sputtered and stopped. In Brooklyn, Syl and Elsora Williamson started worrying about those boxes of sneakers.
When the lights went out, we were eating at home. And we kept eating, and then she said, I think we better get to the store. And we got to Eastern Parkway and Bedford, and that's 6 blocks away. We started seeing our
merchandise
in the street.
Williamson chased the looters out of his store and guarded it for the rest of the night, but he lost close to $200,000 worth of merchandise. And after that night, they had to stop selling sneakers because distributors started demanding payment up front. NPR's Neil Conan was out on the streets that night with a tape recorder.
We're just watching now someone being arrested who was in the radio clinic here. The grates that come down over the side of the store here have been jerked, physically forced up.
Forced up.
And bent outwards. There's broken glass all over the place.
What was really striking was how instantaneous and how widespread it was.
James Sparrow, director of the Blackout History Project at George Mason University, says looting broke out in Brooklyn, the Bronx, Queens, and Upper Manhattan.
It didn't start in one place and then spread across the city in an arc. It was like wildfires beginning in multiple spots at once.
The police arrested more than 3,500 people that night and eventually had to stop because there was no more room in the city's prisons. A city's pride and self-respect shattered along with its storefronts. Because what happened that night mocked a cherished memory, the memory of another blackout 12 years earlier that shut down the whole northeast section of the country. That time, in 1965, New Yorkers reacted with good humor, resourcefulness, and unexpected neighborliness. They lent each other candles, jumped into intersections to direct traffic, and helped each other up long flights of stairs. Historian James Sparrow finds the contrast between these two events perplexing and fascinating.
They seemed almost like a natural experiment.
Circumstances helped make the 2 blackouts different. The first one happened in November under a full moon. In 1977, it came in the middle of a heat wave. But most people blame history. The country had changed by 1977. Since the first blackout, there'd been My Lai and the Pentagon Papers, assassinations, and riots. In New York, crime was rampant. Whole blocks of the Bronx stood desolate, burned out by arsonists. The city was nearly broke, and the city's youth couldn't find jobs. But James Sparrow says that was all true a month or a year earlier as well, and there weren't riots then.
The real question is, why did it take a blackout to unleash that?
And why so quickly, like flipping a switch? It wasn't just the convenient cover of darkness, Sparrow says. Looting continued the next day in broad daylight. There's something symbolic about electricity, he says. It's almost magical, everywhere, woven into our daily lives. Those words provide a clue: power failure. Electrical power symbolizes real power, authority, and order. In 1977, in parts of New York City where people resented power and authority, they saw the lights go out, and they cheered.
What the blackouts reveal is a suspension of the status quo, a suspension of the ordinary rules of the game. and just how thoroughly those rules were intertwined with technology, and in this case, particularly electricity.
Several people interviewed about the blackout of 1977 brought up similarities to the events of September 11th. That also ruptured unthinking assumptions about technology, this time about jet aircraft and tall buildings. Rosalind Williams, a historian of technology at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, wrote recently, "Disasters are revelations."
What's revealed is the extent to which these technical systems are also human systems. So when they collapse, it's a revelation also of human relationships.
Disasters reveal Consolidated Edison's control rooms and the people who run them, the elevators in the World Trade Center and the stories of people who rode them, the streetlights in Crown Heights, and the attitudes of teenagers who stood underneath them. We live in a web of technological and human connections, Williams says. When the mechanical part of that web breaks, what's left, for better and for worse, is humanity. Dan Charles, NPR News, New York.